Welcome to episode 3 of the Level 5 Podcast with Eric Reynolds and Level 5 Consulting and Coaching. We'll talk more about that. My name is Steve Willoughby, and I tell you, if you manage people, if you lead people, if you are looking for additional revenue in your business, Eric Reynolds is the guy to know. We'll tell you all about how to reach Eric, but first, hello, sir. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. Good. You ready to do this?
I am well, yeah. Ready to empower some people out there.
When we talk about the Level 5 Podcast, please know that if this is the first you're hearing about it, this is episode 3. We would invite you to go back to episode 1 and 2 and learn more about the levels. And we're going to talk about the levels through every episode. But this episode, we're really talking about energy. And, you know, you talk to enough people in the world and they're looking for that energy, both physical energy, mental energy, and all of that to continue to keep on, in some cases, the hamster wheel that we're on. And Eric is here to talk about that. And when you talk about level five and level five leadership and level five energy, it's really important to understand that they're tied to a lot of different things. And we're going to learn about that. But let's just start right there. When you're talking about energy blocks and leading through energy blocks and managing through energy blocks, what does that mean?
Yeah, it's I need to credit Bruce Schneider, who is the founder of a coaching school and the method of energy leadership. The coaching school's name is IPEC. It's IPEC, and it's the one I attended. He's got some fascinating discourse on this topic. And when we talk about energy, what I love about his approach is he breaks it out very fundamentally into two areas of energy. One of them is catabolic. You can simply think of that as bad. It's a draining type of energy. It's one in which it's not sustaining for the individual, and one that, if used consistently and over time, is more than likely going to lead to exhaustion. And we'll come back to that in a minute. Anabolic energy being the other one is pretty much the opposite of those things. Sustaining, it's uplifting. It's that rising tide that lifts all boats, if you will, say if you're working in a team context within a company. And when you look at the energy levels that we've been talking about, and we've so far discussed levels 1 through 5 is what we've been focusing on. Level 1 and level 2 are firmly rooted in the catabolic area of energy. Levels 3 through 5, nicely rooted in the anabolic levels. And what I can do to sort of further dive into that a bit is to say that when you are in situations where you are engaging in level 1 and level 2 energy, as an example, you are exhausting yourself. So of the items that we've talked about in previous podcasts, this should really be no surprise that you're going to literally feel like you have low energy in those situations, or quick peaks and heavy valleys of energy if it's the I win, you lose level 2. And the other way around, if it's anabolic, if you're supporting your team and you're ensuring everybody's getting a win in level 5, then you're going to have a different way that you go through your day.
When you talk about, break it down a little bit for me on the catabolic, that's bad. And when I think of that, and I may and probably will be wrong here, when I think of that, I think of, you know, everybody gets excited when people work hard sometimes. And look, working hard is successful people and successful businesses, they work hard. But it's a smart way to work hard. It's not, okay, we're just going to keep busting it for 80 hours a week, and didn't we do great? You can't keep that going. Is that what you're talking about, or does it break down more than that?
Well, and when you think about catabolic, you're right over target there. There's a couple of ways that it can be sort of an obvious catabolic thing going on in a room. An example of that just might be, you know, someone who's arguing over who's going to cover what shift, mm-hmm. right? Someone is determined to win that, mm-hmm. and someone is determined to give someone else the loss, mm-hmm. Because they want to work that particular shift. What you mentioned there brings to mind this sort of phenomenon I can see with teams after a while where, oh God, not another initiative. Mm-hmm. You know, the last three have failed.
Mm-hmm. When are we ever going to focus on the customer? Yeah. It seems like we've always got our stuff going on, yeah. you know?
People are shifting in their seats yep. in the room. Yep. There's this sense of, you know, and that's all level one just pouring out, right, into that room. And when one person out, let's say you've got five people in that room and you're holding a team meeting for your company. One person in that room has that type of approach or energy or quote unquote body language. How do you think that impacts the rest of the group?
Yeah. It just brings it down. I mean,
everybody notices yep. it, whether yep. they act like they do or they don't.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So it's amazing how quickly that rope can slip out of your hands. And whatever you were trying to pull up the hill is now screaming, yeah. you know, back down the hill in right. that situation. So when I say these are blocks, or when we talk about these being blocks, they can be, if you will, mental blocks for individuals, but they can also just be very profound, like virtual barriers to success, because you can't hold the meeting I'm talking about, mm-hmm. right? You can't even say the word initiative before, yeah. you know, yeah. someone adjusts in their seat. So,
yeah. Yeah. And sometimes that's on us. Sometimes yeah. it really, because we see that person and how they're sitting, and we know how they're affecting everything, but we act like we're not going to be looking at it. We're not going to give it any, if we don't acknowledge it, nobody else is going to acknowledge it. Well, yeah. you might as well acknowledge it, because everybody else yeah. is acknowledging
well,
it.
Well, this is a teaser to our next podcast.
Okay.
I'll fast forward a bit, but there are ways around that whole event from happening.
Okay.
This, the whole, oh no, here comes Steve with another initiative right. moment.
All right. So we definitely need yes. that in episode four, let me tell yeah. you. So we'll talk yeah. about that then. So we have these two. We talk about energy. A lot of people, and sometimes I think this becomes a habit, talks about how tired they are. I know it can become a habit. You know, if you wake up and you start telling yourself how tired you are, you're going to be tired regardless, or it's going to get worse. But now you have this anabolic and yeah. catabolic energy. Catabolic is bad. Anabolic is some positive stuff that can really get your team going.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm actually going to peel back for just a second and use a different word to describe these. So as often in coaching, we don't talk about sort of things in terms of good and bad. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example where when I was saying bad in a corporate sense.
Okay.
However, I think I've used this analogy before. You meet the black bear on mm-hmm. the trail in Dogwood Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
Catabolic's not bad.
Yep.
It is a fight or flight. You know, it is, okay, I am in danger. I do not like this situation. You're probably and hopefully for most of you not going to go into victim mode when a bear,
right.
You know, comes across your path. However, there can be, particularly in level one or level two, this, you know, burst of protective, you know, defensive, I've got to do something, fight or flight. Right.
Right. right.
So, however, I think the more important words to focus on with this would be draining or sustaining, right? Because you can't run into three bears in Dogwood Canyon. By the time you run into the second one, your adrenaline will have you so exhausted, you'll be crawling on the ground. So in the case of, sustaining energy and anabolic, imagine that meeting that we just talked about after you've already peeled through one successful initiative and everyone in that group has got a win on that. You've got an entirely different atmosphere. And leaders especially, recognize that just immediately, as they begin to talk about the next thing they're going to go through.
And it becomes a habit, right?
Yes.
I mean, it becomes a habit that everything has to be, you know, just there's no small issues. Everything is either blown up into a big issue or whatever. And it starts, as you say, draining people to the point it's tough to lead in that situation.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, when you look at that concept of leadership, one of the things that leaders can get in a trap in is thinking that they have to make every single decision themselves. They have to call the shot. Great leaders know when it's time to lead by consensus versus lead by dictum, right?
Mm-hmm.
And call the shot or vice versa. Sometimes, you know, as a leader, I'm sure you've experienced this, you need to call the shot.
Yes.
And break a tie or just say, look, this is the way we're going to go through this. But again, too much of any one of those is not something you need to have both of those muscles to be able to lead.
I remember a time in my career that empowerment was kind of the buzzword, and I don't think it's a buzzword anymore. I think it's really important, but you know, it was the buzzword everybody was throwing around, and one of the leaders decided, well, how I'm going to empower is just wait until somebody makes a decision, and once the group makes a decision, we will empower them. Well, maybe I'm not even sure that was a smart way to think about it in big picture. Somebody's got to make a decision. If you're in a leadership role, lead. And I think if you try to lead every time, that becomes overwhelming. But if you sit there to wait for Steve and Eric to come to an agreement, they may not come to an agreement. And that's not bad. That's good. You need two different views.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to have the elbows in the room to say, okay, duly noted, here's where we're going and here's why, or just here's where we're going. Let's get there and adjust as we go.
Yeah.
Off base, on base?
No, on base, absolutely. And, you know, when you look at the percentage that you're talking about there as far as leadership goes, from a level five standpoint, you want the vast majority of those initiatives, we'll stick with that example, to be consensus driven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that ability to make the call should be used as little as possible because you will need to use it at certain points. So if you are in a situation where you're constantly the one calling the shot in those examples, what do you think happens to the team in that scenario?
Well, it's going to shut down, and there's no succession plan. Nobody is being able to make decisions on their own, so they're going to even stop thinking about it. They're just going to go, well, they're going to make the decisions. I'm just going to sit here and wait for them to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a form of catabolic energy right there, right? I'm just going to sit here. It doesn't matter what I say or think or do. They're going to call the shot anyway, right? That's... And when we look back on the aspects of level one energy, that is right in there. It has to do with lethargy or apathy. And in particular, in that example, apathy probably is just oozing out in that moment because, yeah, I know Steve's going to call the shot. I'm not even really going to participate in this.
Right.
Flip that around and know that, okay, we just had a successful initiative. Everybody on this group came up with it via consensus, then that expectation is that we're going to continue to do that with whatever we're doing next, right? And most importantly, when you as a leader actually call the shot in that case, everyone knows that, you know, that needed to be done. It's not like Steve uses that muscle every time we meet or every day he's around. And it becomes just a very... going back to that word empowerment, I agree. Man, that was all over management mm-hmm. books at one point, mm-hmm. right? But it is really the best way to describe an individual who is sitting in that chair thinking, I'm really going to be a part of this process and decision.
So we had a situation this week here. I say a situation. It was just a normal everyday thing. Somebody was late paying their bill, and phone calls weren't being returned, and there was a group email, which can be bad, but this particular group email, the people making those calls were communicating with each other.
Or really, really funny.
Yes,
a group email can
yes,
be really,
that,
really
that
funny.
Is, that is very true.
Sometimes unintended.
Yes. Because I can think I'm typing something, and those words don't come out, so it could be bad. But anyway, you know, our office team leader really took the lead and said, this is what needs to happen. And the revenue team said, well, what about this or this? And they go, no, this needs to happen. And finally, the revenue team said, you're right, let's go this way. And there wasn't leadership. Well, I mean, they were leaders, but there wasn't that person. I didn't inject. I listened. The marketing team leader listened. And once everybody was done, she got on there and said, great decision. That's what needed to happen. And I sent an email the next day and said, I just wanted to commend you guys because you had communication and leadership was taken and people were speaking up, but you made a decision. You made the right decision in this case and you moved forward. And I think if you don't support people, even, you know, in something that small, they won't go to that next step and
right.
keep making decisions.
Yeah, guess what? They won't always make the right decision,
right?
And
I mean,
maybe you
neither
don't even
will
know
I.
that, right? In the moment, you don't. It's not that you know as a leader, oh, you guys just made the wrong decision, right? But it's a scenario, to your point, where you do have to encourage that behavior because they will get it together and as a percentage be making more right decisions than they are, quote unquote, wrong decisions moving forward. So you're right. You have to really encourage that behavior.
Talk to me about Gale. I understand Gale will wreck your world.
Yeah. You want to stay away from Gale at all costs. Picture a big German woman, you know, that's got biceps. She could lift you out from under your car if the jack failed. First of all,
if that ever happened, I didn't get myself under that cart under the jack. So somebody do some investigating first. Yeah, but I get it. Okay.
There were no flat tires. Yeah. So she's actually an acronym, Gale.
Okay.
And she stands for what we call energy blocks.
Okay.
These are all catabolic in nature. So these are
bad.
Yeah. If you're walking through the mental mind maze, if you will, of your life, and you're walking into these things as you're trying to, you know, think through things or come up with a new strategy, or even in an everyday moment, you bump into these walls, these blocks. And so what Gale stands for, G-A-I-L, first, G is gremlins.
Okay.
So much fun to talk about. You know, it takes me right back to the movie from the 80s. Assumptions for A, interpretations for I, and limiting beliefs for L. And when you, as a leader, understand these blocks, And this is critical when I work with organizations. I quiz and test on this constantly. The leadership team needs to be able to know and recognize these things when they come up. And some of them are more difficult to recognize and or understand in situations. And candidly, gremlins in particular, you most likely will need a professional coach to help an individual work through a gremlin. And we'll kind of talk to that when we get to that one.
I think we might've talked about this on the last episode. Sometimes it's easier to help other people than it is yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Whether it's, I think we were talking about this with writing. If somebody brings me their writing, it's pretty simple for me to start cutting and getting and, you know, let's take this six pair.
Oh, the axe comes off your back. Yeah.
But if I'm writing for myself, it's like, wait a minute. Because, and it's the curse of knowledge that in a lot of cases I don't have, but, you know, you do know what you know and you start writing more.
Yeah.
So, and I bring that up because I would think it would be the same way here. It's easier to see somebody else's gremlins than the gremlins you're taking care of and almost nurturing to grow in your own organization.
Oh, yeah. You open up that closet door and you got 300 of them all sitting in there that need to be fed, you know? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no. So completely true in that sense. And it's a physician heal thyself type scenario at times, you know, where you get that frustration. And in the sense of, if you've had repeated events where, to your point, you've, you know, we'll stick with that analogy of trying to write something out, right? What's happening, let's say you've done it three times, you haven't really liked, it's been this awful struggle, you may have pulled some hair out or something like that. What happens when you sit down the fourth time? You know, many of these energy blocks actually are coming into play in that moment before you've even put your fingers on the keyboard.
Okay.
So that's why these things are, it's, if nothing else as a leader, they're helpful to categorize something so you can explain it to someone or sort of call it out, because the actual beauty of these is once they are exposed to sort of like someone saying, you know, I think that's an assumption, they usually crumble pretty fast.
Right. Right.
But it's the part of actually calling them out in that moment.
And having the confidence in the safe space and all of that.
Yes.
And I know safe space can roll some eyes. But, man, I think it's important in a business to be able to say, is that really, a gremlin? Or isn't that a whatever? Can we do this backwards and start with limiting beliefs? Because it's something I just think is so important to recognize them in yourself and recognize them in other people. And like you said, call them out. But
yeah, limiting beliefs are classics. And I mean that because the limiting belief is something held broadly. And when I say broadly, I mean across a group. Maybe it's a, I'll use an example of a church, congregation, or an entire planet. So you can have that group across a significant scale. And one great example historically is Sir Roger Bannister. Are you familiar with that name?
That's the 4-minute mile.
You got it. Okay. Yeah. The 4-minute mile. So prior to him doing that, physicians all over the world were saying, no, this simply, a human cannot run faster.
Some people say you would die if you ran a mile in 4 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. And so that is a classic example of a limiting belief, right? It has been cut into the stone, if you will, as something as truth. And in reality, you know, Roger goes along, breaks the 4-minute mile, and then what happens sequentially after that?
Did it again or something like that.
That's right. And it's something to keep in mind as a leader of a company, because when you actually crush a limiting belief that might be out there, you could think of various examples of businesses that have existed. You know, who in their right mind would think, you know, a coffee shop could open up around the country, right? And look at Starbucks now. Coffee's local. People like the conversation. That's been tried. It's failed, whatever. So what happened after Starbucks was successful? Competition, right? Somebody comes in and says, hey, that can be done.
Yep.
So while it's great to crush the limiting belief, and if you're in a situation where you need to, go for it, just keep in mind that once that is open, there are going to be many more coming behind you.
Because we have a lot of great mom and pop. Look at Branson, Missouri, a lot of great mom and pop coffee shops.
Oh, yeah.
And not just Branson, they're Kimberly all over.
Yeah.
But probably wouldn't have happened if it hadn't have been Starbucks. And now Starbucks is growing in the market as well. But
yeah,
that's a really good point that I hadn't thought of.
Yeah, though. Absolutely. Shout out to Transylvania Bakery, by the way, in downtown. A great example of a great coffee shop in that situation, and locally owned. So, you just need to be aware that in that case, okay, now I've shattered the mythos around that, and we got to keep going. We got to keep innovating.
So I want to take you back to last week when we talked about, you know, your behavior talk really got me thinking, because, you know, the fact of the matter is we spend a lot of time. We spend more than we should here, probably talking about the end result, even though, You know, I talk about Nick Saban, you know, a championship is a result. And if you focus on championships, you're not doing the behaviors you need to do to get that. So that was already there. Then you talked about behaviors. If you look at a limiting belief, if Starbucks always just focused on we're going to be nationwide, they wouldn't have had the behaviors and the steps that got them successful in Seattle or wherever, and then this right. market and this market. You don't go nationwide. I mean, I've never taken a business nationwide, but you're not going to do it all at once. You've yeah. got to become successful. Is that how you attack limiting beliefs as well, as really focus on those behaviors, or do you have to do that in the mind first?
Yeah, it's a great question. You definitely have to get over it in your mind. You know, you definitely have to say, okay, I think that's a limiting belief. And if you've got a group around you, say in your business, that support that's a limiting belief, you've made the mental decision, right? That, okay, we're going to attempt to crush that. But you know, as you sort of pointed out there and can imagine, the logistical feat of then going through and doing whatever you want to do is likely not to be insubstantial. So I think you have to keep it in mind as part of the fuel for the mission, if you will, as you're going forward. You know, to your point, as they spread throughout Seattle, and then spread throughout Washington, and someone probably went, hey, you know, I think we can keep going with mm-hmm. this. There comes a certain point when maybe that limiting belief, for example, wasn't even something they were addressing when they started. But now as they're getting there, they're thinking, I think that wall we're looking at up ahead of us is fake. I don't think it's real. And I think we can blow right through that wall and maybe four other walls after that.
Yeah.
You know, a more profound example is... historically speaking, original explorers,
yeah.
European explorers. What was the limiting belief about crossing the ocean?
Oh, a whole flat problem.
Yeah, you fall off the end of the earth, yeah. right? There'd be dragons out there right. towards the end, and all kinds of mythical stories. And I'm quite sure, given the size of some of the sea creatures yeah. that do exist today that we know of, that they could think of those as, you know, beasts that would take them down or go over the edge or things along those lines. So that's just a classic limiting belief of why, you know, why would I go out there to try and, you know, I'm going to put my life on the line essentially to try and bust that limiting belief.
So how do you help your team with the limiting belief? And one of the things we talk about here, that words matter, and I know that doesn't start with us, but words really do matter. And we talk in terms of words, strong words and weak words. You know, I say like is a pretty weak word. Successful people don't focus on what they like or what they don't like. It's more of, you know, is this needed or not needed? So if you major in what you like, it's going to be very difficult to go to the next level. With that same thought with limiting beliefs, I mean, I guess if you constantly talked about limiting beliefs, maybe that's too much, but really focusing on those behaviors that bust through that limiting belief?
Yeah, yeah. Goal setting yeah. is a classic conversation to sort of test the boundaries around limiting beliefs. Depending upon the management book that you may have read, they could be wildly important goals. They could be BHAGs, big, hairy, blank mm-hmm. goals. Oh, mm-hmm. I just said that. I guess I can on my own podcast.
You can say whatever the hell you want to say, man. It's your podcast.
Really? No, yeah. I'm just kidding. Well, let's change the topic. I've been wanting to get this off my chest for a while. Everybody will be telling everybody else, hey, tune in around 29 minutes.
Yeah,
just watch him go. So, you know, when you look at those aspects of goal setting, right? When I work with organizations on this, you've got to have the moonshot. You have to think about, you know, okay, let's just say we're at 100% of our revenue number, and we want to take that up to 130%. depending upon what line of business you're in, that may be a moonshot to mm-hmm. increase your revenue 30%. Mm-hmm. It may not be that earth shaking. And that's kind of where I help out with, is that really, if we hire another rep, you're probably going to hit 130%. If we know John sells this much, and if we hire Jane, well, then we're going to be at 130%. So it's really a matter of how do we afford Jane, right? That's factual, but it's not all that moonshot-ish.
Right.
If you look at it as well, it's not really about how many people we have. It's how we're actually getting our message out there and how we're delivering our product. And we got to account for our supply chain. Those are things where those get pretty moonshot-ish. So goal setting is a great way as a team to analyze and crush limiting beliefs. Because you can have individuals in that meeting that might say, there's no way we can get to 130% of our number this year. And if everybody in that group starts nodding their head and believing that, you have a limiting belief on your hand as a leader. Yeah.
Right.
And they may be right. I'm just saying. But if that's how you're going to set that goal, then you need to just realize that everybody's got that belief in the room.
And talking louder and reminding them who's boss and all of that does not break through the limiting beliefs,
right? No, it does not. No, it does not. And what does is actually, there's a few ways you can address that. My favorite way to address that one is humor me. Let's just say that we are going to go for this regardless. What are we doing? How are we getting to this number? What are the things that we put in place? And using that general sort of mental power, if you will, in the room, because everybody in that room, if you've got, you know, your finance person and you got your sales leader, you got your marketing person, maybe your operations person, once there's a minute crack in the limiting belief, and you've got an anabolic, you know, scenario there that's going on, you will start to see them all pick up the scent, essentially, right? They will all begin, there's blood in the water now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain excitement that starts to build with that. And I always recommend to leaders to have that session in that fashion. As a leader, you know, one of your questions might be, okay, as a leader, what do I do? It's to get them pointed in the right direction. Where is the biggest crack in that wall? And how can I get them to recognize that that's maybe an area that we can exploit, we can go through, we can absolutely begin here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And once you get through that session, thank them all, tell them, you know, let's think about this, and then come back. Because you do want to have that second discussion with them on the same topic, because it's going to give everybody a little time to think. And I honestly have never seen one of those sessions, the second session, where some people come back and go, you know what, I don't know what we were smoking in that room, or did you put a gummy in my, I don't know, but that ain't going to happen. It's always the other way around. It's like, you know, as I was thinking about what Steve was saying the other day, come to think of it, I've heard of this organization down so blah, blah, blah. And suddenly it's like, well, that moonshot looks possible. And now you have, as a leader, dispelled the limiting belief.
How important is acknowledging reality as where we are, though, as we talk about that limiting belief? Because, I mean, you know, scoreboards mean something. And to me, revenue is scoreboard. And we can say we've done this, this, and this, but it's still back to the scoreboard.
Yeah. Are you saying that in the sense of, here's our reality today? You're looking at the numbers.
Right.
And you're wanting to keep them grounded in that sense? Is that what you're saying? Or
what am I saying? I guess reality and transparency is so important to me. I would acknowledge, here's where we are today, and if we're going to break through this limiting beliefs, here's how we have to change. But yeah, you're right. You know, one of the things we talk about, a lot of sports analogies, probably too many, but I've told you off the air before, I kind of get aggravated when people go, oh, I hate sports analogies. Really? Because it is about winning and it is about business now at the professional level. I mean, it's just a good way to think about it, in my opinion. You could do the same thing with bands and other things. But sometimes, you know, especially with football, there's very little rah-rah when you really take a look at what pros and colleges, if they're looking at game tape. And we talked about this earlier this week. I said, if I'm facing Jim Johnson and I have to block Jim Johnson, who's basically double what I am, they're not going to tell me, well, go get him, Tiger, and just believe you can do it. They're going to say, we got to have somebody help Willoughby with Johnson because he can't do that. That doesn't put me down. It's just the reality of the situation and how we're going to move around that obstacle. With that in mind, is that something you also look at when you're talking about limiting beliefs?
That's all level five behavior that you're talking about, right? That is everyone, in the case of the actual on-the-field analogy, that's everyone on that field helping each other get the win, right? That is a fluid sort of one organism as you are in a defense out there on that team. So it absolutely is a component of it. And there, you know, to your point, you could have an organization and a meeting where they come up with what they believe is a limiting belief, crushing goal. And as a leader, maybe you still don't go for it. Maybe you don't. But you know what you have done is you have dispelled the limiting belief.
Gotcha.
And that is really the thing, that exercise in and of itself is just as important as the actual outcome of whatever you're doing, right? Because even if you got, let's say you did go for it and you got close. Well, if you do a postmortem on, you know what, we went for that 30%, we came up with 27%. The most we've ever increased our income is 11.
Yeah.
Is that a win?
Yeah.
You know, is that a...
I'll take that.
Yeah. So there's that. It's not a conversation immediately about, hey, let's put up the moonshot and we're, you know, that's why I'm here. We're going for that. It's really about helping people understand that the limitations that they can get a lot of times are up in their own head. I'll use my sports analogy around limiting beliefs that... I think is just a hilarious story. Self-confessed lifelong Pittsburgh Steeler fan.
Okay. I like the Steelers.
When I started watching football in the 70s, there were really only two teams, the Dallas Cowboys and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it seemed like they alternated Super Bowls back and forth. Sorry to all you Oakland Raider fans out there. And I know you had a very painful moment at one time involving Franco Harris, but we're all past that now.
God rest his soul.
Yes. Chuck Knoll comes to Pittsburgh, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Pittsburgh's notorious right now for, you know, Mike Tomlin, I think, is the fourth coach in 50-some years of that organization. But when Chuck Knoll came to the Steelers, I want to say it was in 69, not completely sure of that, but they were not a winning team.
Right.
In fact, at one point they, you know, were combined, back in World War II with the Philadelphia Eagles and known as the Steagles. They were just sort of a fence post team in the National Football League. And in his beginning press conference, his very first press conference as he came to the team, a noted Pittsburgh reporter for the local Gazette or paper said, Chuck, we appreciate you're here and we like everything that you're talking about, but what makes you think you can come to Pittsburgh and win? And he paused for a second, and Chuck Knoll was known as the professor. That was his nickname by his players. And he said, because winning has nothing to do with geography. And
great
that
answer.
Room
I have never
went
heard that.
Silent
yeah.
for minutes as the reporters were like writing it down and then thinking about it. And so what had he just crushed? This limiting belief that because we're here in Pittsburgh, we can't get in the playoffs. We're never going to have a winning team. So, but he did it in kind of a comical, wry way, if you will. So,
so stay there with me though for just a second. I guess I interrupted you.
No, that's all right.
So let's take your Pittsburgh Steelers of today with Mike Tomlin, who is a coach I appreciate and all of that. But somewhere along the line, they started talking about how Tomlin has never been below 500. And my question is becoming, well, is that the standard to be above 500, or is it the standard to get into the playoffs and win? And I guess that would be the question I would ask your Steelers now, because if you're constantly talking about the fact we haven't been below 500, we haven't been below 500, okay, but that doesn't get you in the playoffs too either.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And it could very simply be the difference between a good leader and a great leader, right? So it is statistically remarkable that he has been there now for over a decade and has never been below 500. Last season, they started out, I want to say at one point they were 2-5 and ended up north of 500. So yay, Pittsburgh, right? But you didn't make it into the playoffs. And the, to your point, historically, they have limped into the playoffs just over 500 in those final wild card spots, right? So it's one of those situations where when you look at how Chuck Knoll won, right, six shutouts in a season with a defense. I'm just going to say that one more time. Six goose eggs put up by the other team.
Who were all being paid too.
All being paid as well. And not on a just Pittsburgh was not a one of those. They weren't the New York Yankees, for example, on salary and payroll.
Right.
So there was a culture that he created, an expectation. It's a Nick Saban. We are going to win, you know, this thing. And we are going to we're going to do it in the following way. So, yeah, it's a great point that you bring up in that sense is, okay, and I kind of look at that as a, it's like a media talking point that annoys me when I hear it. It's, yeah, it's statistically interesting. I sure would like a Super Bowl ring.
That's exactly
right.
So,
you know, it comes down to a lot of other things. Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes as an example, and his supporting cast, and Andy Reid. He's got a great system going on there. So, you know, there's more to it than just the defense. And if I were to give Tomlin one criticism, I think he is a heavily defensively minded coach. And that is why that team has never been below, you know, but there's this other side of the game.
Exactly. You are listening to the Level 5 Podcast. This is episode 3, and you can learn more about Eric Reynolds. He is a consultant. He's also a certified coach. Learn more about him at LVL5Consulting.com or on Facebook at EQR Coach or on LinkedIn at Eric Q. Reynolds. Want to pick up the pace just a little bit. This is really cool. We're learning about Gale, and Gale is all about energy blocks, if you will. And we started in reverse order of the limiting beliefs, and then comes interpretations. And it would seem like that's fairly close. Maybe I'm wrong. Tell me about those.
So interpretations and assumptions, we can go pretty quickly through because they're not situations where they're overly complex. The example I like to use on interpretations is, say you're walking through the office and you're coming up on the break room and you hear a couple people in the break room laughing and giggling and you walk around the corner and it stops. What would your interpretation of that?
They were, you know, they were doing something that maybe they didn't want everybody else, or they were talking about me
talking about whatever that is.
You know, but I've been to football games and I could have sworn the two teams in the huddles were talking about me. So that's kind of a me problem. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah. Did you run out there? What are you guys doing?
I'm here.
What's up, guys? Exactly. It's an interpretation of something you have observed in a catabolic fashion, right? You're thinking that's all about you.
Yep.
The actual opposite of that could be the case. They could be planning a party for you or a birthday cake or something, and they're excited, or they maybe going to get the cake. They had a weird interaction in the store or something. You know, they're just telling a story, but they don't want to. They don't want you to know about that to tip off the surprise. So interpretations are simply something that you observe, that you absorb in a way that is catabolic. And it's in a level one fashion, right? Or it could even be level two, right? It could be a classic is someone cuts you off in traffic. And you might not know maybe that someone has, for some reason decided to take their beloved spouse to the emergency room who's having a baby, who's laying down in the seat in the back, and you can't see him, right? Yeah. But you just think, oh, man, they did that to me,
yes.
Basically,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How dare they? So you are putting an interpretation out there in that moment of that event when you really don't know the facts. Yeah. So it's a very close cousin to assumptions, which is the next situation. And an assumption is different in the sense that it is a belief that because something went a certain way previously, it is always going to go that way in the future. So it's different from, because people often think, oh, that person cut me off in traffic. I'm going to, oh, you made an assumption that,
yep.
You know, they were doing, not, it's not actually what you just did, right? If it was a situation that, if you're going to race up, cut them off, try and get them over, whatever, that would be an assumption if that's happened before, right?
Exactly.
Now, an assumption in this case is, and this is the classic example that I used, and sometimes you can do all of these at once, candidly, by the way, just in case you're curious about that. But I joked about walking up in a grocery store line and saying, someone in front of me is about to get the third party checkout and ask if they can pay for their groceries with that. So I will, when I step into a line, I do have a belief that this is just going to go bad because it's went bad in the past, right?
So you're assuming at that point that that's what's going to happen. You're making that assumption.
Yes, it is not a truth.
Right.
Could have a wonderful experience,
right.
And so it's one of those cases where what does that do to you? What does the instant belief that this went a certain way? Now, the interesting thing about assumptions is generally they're catabolic. They can be anabolic.
Yeah.
They can be, but you do have to watch out for them either way, because you want your basis of your leadership, your energy that you're focusing to be based in some fact on some level, right? So you don't just want to be sort of pie in the sky type scenario and just assume because you've had three wins in a row, you're going to win the fourth one, right? You still have to have the discipline. However, most people in the assumption sense, it's around a catabolic event.
I know of a business that talks about assume best intentions. And, that can change your day. So the assumption, as you just talked about, can be positive, but usually it is not. And especially if you have the catabolic energy going on, you're never going to assume in a positive way. Is that a fair statement?
Fair statement. Yeah, you can't see through that cloud.
Right.
You've got that going on. And when I work with organizations, we've mentioned the assessment that I can bring to bear that gives people two pictures of themselves: their everyday sort of energy on where they are as an average. And again, you're not a certain level; you go up and down, but it kind of gives you what you typically are. And then your energy under stress. And if that every day comes up as leaning towards the catabolic side, per your example, I would expect that out of someone in a meeting. In fact, it can almost be predicted.
Right.
But again, why are we talking about this? Because as a leader, if you recognize the assumption, you can challenge that assumption, right? You can ask them, so why are you saying that? Gosh, the question why is a beautiful thing for a three-year-old, because they never stop asking, right? Why? It doesn't matter what you say. It's like, okay, I need a moment.
Yeah.
But in a corporate or a business sense, asking why do you think that's going to happen a lot of times will just expose the mythology that's in their head behind that assumption. And it's often, again, once it's identified as an assumption, it really just kind of vanishes because you know it's not a truth, right? It's not a fact.
Well, and isn't that so important? Just, again, you know I'm the transparent guy, but to be transparent about something that's, hey, you might be saying and thinking this. I understand why you would. I get all of that. I'm fighting through that myself. So not trying to be super person, explaining that everybody's walking this road together. But if we're open about those assumptions or open about those limiting beliefs, it's one way to shed some light on it. It goes back to the gremlins. You shed light and they disappear a little bit, right?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And where organizations can really get wrapped around the axle with this situation are their customers. So a lot of times companies make assumptions based off of customer behavior. Customer is upset. The assumption machine just starts cranking out reasons why that person's upset. Oh, I've met someone like you. They're never happy. Or, you know, you can't make up a decision and that's really messing with our thing here, right? And it's one of those cases where there's actual factual reasons why the customer is upset. It's often pretty rare that someone just is going to be upset for the sake of being upset. I'm not saying those individuals don't exist, but again, you can run that up against fact. Well, why are you frustrated with, you know, you want to change things around, but well, wait a minute, I guess looking at it in our process, we never told you a deadline when we had to have your final cut, right?
Exactly.
Or over here, you're angry because of this or that. Why? Well, we actually didn't let you know what's going to happen next, that type of thing.
This organization is developing, you know, a process on some different things because we've had some, you know, we've looked at a situation. So we just didn't communicate. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know. And we got to own that. We can't blame that on the customer for not asking those questions. We've got to own it because if we own it, we can do something about it. If we keep giving it to the customer, we're out of control there or we don't have control in that particular situation. That's awesome. You're listening to episode 3 of the Level 5 podcast. His name is Eric Reynolds, and he's introducing us to GALE this week. We've kind of gone backwards with the acronym, but it's limiting beliefs, it's interpretations and assumptions, and the G in GALE talks about gremlins.
Yeah. Gremlins are doozies, and it's one I recommended earlier around coaching. This is where a gremlin is something that is best, I think the best analogy I can give is that little voice in your head that goes off, that you hear, that says something's going to go badly for you, right? I'll go back to my checkout analogy. That's both a gremlin and an assumption that I'm going to get in that moment. And if I see someone in front of me that looks like, you know, they're going through their purse for something they can't find, I'm interpreting that as here comes a third party check, right? So in those cases, it's, and those voices, we all have them. You know, we all have those moments. It could be, you know, when I coach with organizations and coach salespeople, some of them will talk about, you know, I have a real challenge when I walk into a room and I'm going to do my presentation and I'm, you know, I'm setting up and I'm in front of these executives. I have this poser syndrome. Like, what am I doing here? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't, if those, these people are going to find me out, you know, they're going to uncover, you know, what's going on, you know, and so that gremlin is just sitting on that shoulder. And it is essentially whispering those things in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And you can think of a dozen or hundreds of situations where we might have gremlins, right? The interesting thing about gremlins, and this is more of an advanced topic, so I won't really get into it here, but is they're actually there trying to protect us.
Sure.
They're actually trying, in some weird way, it's our own self-protection mechanism that we use.
So do you buy into the fact that our brain, you know, is really there to make sure we don't get eaten by the dinosaur? I mean, that's what fear is,
yes.
right? It
yes.
is there to survive
yes.
because there was a time in our world that if we weren't fearful, we wouldn't maybe not survive.
Yes.
Do you buy into that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's wiring in there that absolutely is that situation, right? A simple example is that while there were some nomadic aspects, right, there was, if you're looking at facing a huge or crossing a huge geographic space, what's in that space, right? Your primitive mind is telling you death
yes.
is out there.
Yes.
I don't see it. But I know that people that go that way don't come back. So, yeah, I absolutely believe that. And, you know, the gremlins that we have are typically products of our childhood. They typically have been formed very young, to the point at which we can actually begin to form such things. And we've just carried them with us. You know, we've just brought them along. And when I work with organizations, one of the things that I always have a combination of is, you know, we're going to consult on the practicals, right? The strategic, the tactical things, the process. But we're going to do some coaching because you need to be able to address those gremlins as they come up. And there's a way to do that with coaching. And the beautiful thing is when you get to the point where you hear that voice, and you recognize that that's the gremlin talking, you have now gotten past that aspect of the gremlin. So it's, again, a gremlin, it's really gremlins, plural, mm-hmm. right? We all have more
sure.
than one. But there is a way to get past those with coaching.
And I just say this as a side note, and I think it fits in level five, but, you know, you talked about the family. I had a great family. I had a great upbringing. I had a lot of love and support. At the same time, one of the ways we joked back and forth that we weren't smart enough, and if you made a mistake, it was really kind of pointed out in a fun way, and, you know, what are you doing? You're not smart enough to do that or know who you are. And all that's great, but, man, I don't care if you're 58 or 78, you remember those and you've got to bust
yeah.
through those.
Oh, yeah.
And I tell you, I haven't seen it yet, but somebody's going to tell my grandson one of these days that, you know, you can't do that or you're not. Now, I'm not going to go and say you can do anything you want to. I can say you can work to do anything you want to.
Yeah.
But don't be putting that in my grandson's head because,
yeah.
you know, I mean, that's
yeah.
not going to work. And the same with your staff, the same, they have those same gremlins. You
oh,
got to
yeah.
help them get out there. You know, to me, it's, used to work with a manager and they liked being manager and they liked talking about manager. I don't really like to be referred to as a manager because I think you manage process. I know there's a lot of general managers in my title. You manage process. You got to lead people, and it's two totally different things at that particular point. You got to help them understand where their level five is and get there.
Yeah.
Am I off base?
No, you're there. And, you know, the reality is, again, everyone has these, right?
Yeah.
Everyone has these. And so it's a situation where, as parents, we're human. And we may impart things upon our kids in certain moments that sticks with them more than we're even knowing we're doing. But it doesn't just have to be in childhood either. I can remember one situation where this was, you know, when I was in my late teens working at a new company. And I heard that I didn't get a promotion because someone who was my manager at the time said, well, he doesn't even have a degree. And at the time, I didn't have a college degree. So it stuck with me as like, oh, you know, I can't go for that next job, even though I know all the practical skills because I don't have the degree. And that gremlin just cycled through. I really had to work through
right.
that aspect. So you can get them at any time. We often get them, again, from childhood. But they once you call them out and begin to address them and acknowledge them, people will start crushing barriers.
When we talk about success around here, we talk about the fact that people are not successful because they're lucky. They're not. I mean, we actually talk about, I never want to hear anybody go, that must be nice. Mm-hmm. Must be nice to have that or have that. Well, probably wasn't nice when they were busting their butt to get that. It probably, you know.
Yeah.
And the other thing we talk about is successful people are as fearful as we are sometimes. They just use it differently. They use it to bust through instead of withdraw. They put up with all these failures. It's not success isn't just stepping up and, okay, I'm the lucky one that's going to be success. It's work, and it's also understanding that there's a lot of gremlins in the way that some you got to pay attention to, and some you just got to flip off and go, you know, this is how we're going to go through this.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
You're listening to the Level 5 Podcast, and one of the reasons I'm so appreciative that Eric allows me to be the co-host is because I can ask these questions, I can make these comments, and get his great response back. And you can learn more about Eric by simply going to LVL5Consulting.com. On Facebook, he's at EQR Coach. And for LinkedIn, Eric Q. Reynolds. We hope that you will do that. This is important because as you learn these lessons, as you apply these lessons to your organization or your non-for-profit or whatever the organization is, when you apply these, you help your team become better. You help your team understand what Level 5 is all about, as well as the other levels and how to manage through them. And they're going to help you defeat Gale and win because of Gale and all of those things. So we hope you've enjoyed this. Thanks for your time. I'm very excited about episode 4 next week. I really am. You've got some great things outlined for us, and we look forward to talking to you.
Can't wait.
All right. That's it for episode 3 of the Level 5 Podcast.